Hello and welcome to this week's TES podcast. I'm Dave Speck and joining me is news editor Will Stewart. Hi, Will.
Hi, Dave.
We've got reporter John Roberts. Hi, John.
Hello there.
We've got reporter Catherine Love. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, hello.
Now, despite there being a risk of exams not going ahead next year and pupils being awarded centre-assessed grades again, teachers are currently being told not to build up student assessment portfolios. And this is something that's come from Ofqual chief regulator Dame Glenys Stacey, Catherine, isn't it? Catherine, you did the story. What's the rationale on this?
I think it's just that I mean, this would only apply to a minority of students anyway. So they would only really go with any kind of form of teacher assessment if students couldn't sit any of the papers, couldn't sit any of the reserve papers in the summer, and there was nothing else to put forward towards their qualification. So it's a real minority of students. But I think that the rationale behind it was that, you know, schools have a lot to do anyway, and that just this isn't something that they should be spending time on.
Well, you said it worries me greatly, didn't you, that teachers would be spending their valuable time or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's the sense that it would be a bit futile at the moment to do this. And so I think she partly said it as a way of reassuring schools that they don't need to be kind of worrying about that at the moment. Like, they don't need to be building up a level of portfolios and assessments as a basis for anything in 2021. And I think that's probably wise. I mean, we had a story a little while ago based on some comments from members of ASCL, so head teachers, and they were saying that students are quite worried and stressed out about assessments that they're doing at the moment anyway, and sort of feel that they could go towards some sort of teacher assessment, and that is definitely kind of in the air. So I think in terms of reassuring pupils as well, that is probably a good comment to make, that schools shouldn't be doing that right now.
I can see that it's going to be pretty rare, but I mean, the thing that occurred to me is if they don't do it now, when are they going to do it, and what are they going to what are they going to do it with? You know, I mean, when a minority, but when is going to be the good time, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that is a really good point to make, which is I think that there hasn't been that much detail for schools about, you know, about what the contingency plan would be for those students. And so it is a good point, you know, if not now, would it be during next term? Would it be, you know, compiling some form of mock assessment? So the instruction seems pretty clear to schools, don't do this right now. But then you do have to think, well, if they're asked to do it last minute, what will they base it on?
What she seemed to be saying was, I can't remember exact words, but it was like it needs to be done at the point. But but they're going to have reserve papers as well, aren't they? So the only students that are in this position will have missed all papers. So I don't know if most subjects have more than one paper, don't they? So they will have had to miss both papers, for example, and then a reserve paper. And by the time you've got to that stage, then presumably you've gone right the way through the exam season and then out the other end. So what are they supposed to do then?
No, I think that isn't totally clear. And the other thing that she said as well was that it would be like an opt-in process for students, which again, you know, there's questions around that, like, you know, why a student might choose to opt in to that process at that point. But I think that there hasn't been. You're absolutely right. If they got to that stage, then it would mean that they'd missed all crucial assessments. So, and also you have to kind of think, well, if students have missed all of the opportunities to sit the exam, they probably then haven't been in school that much over the course of you know, the last couple of terms. So then, what is that assessment being based on? So it's I think although there was that instruction there for schools not to do it, and it does make sense, then there wasn't a lot of clarity on when schools should do that for that group of students.
Catherine, let me just ask you about something else that Dame Glenys said in the Ed Select Committee this week, because she said that teachers themselves could be asked to quantify the amount of learning loss that students have faced. And this could be, if I read this right, it could be a traffic light system could be used, could it? Where you would get a grade, it's like a grade 4, with a red light next to it to denote learning loss, similar to what we discussed last week about the asterisks.
That was something. So she said it could be RAG rated with individual subject teachers giving some sort of rating or data
students measure that learning loss though. I mean I suppose you would go on pupil absence, wouldn't you? Or would you look at the number of teacher lessons lost because the teacher's been off?
Yeah, you would. I mean, someone I spoke to about this, I think it would have to be reasonably broad brush, because it's not really going to be possible to have a system with sort of different. I mean, I suppose you could have a traffic light system, but you couldn't really have a system with sort of like number of days lost or and going into that much detail. Like I think it would have to be, there'd be certain cutoff points about, you know, say you're in a region where schools have been off for a certain amount of time, or say you yourself or your school has been off for a certain amount of time, then maybe that's a cutoff point and that gets put in an asterisk or a rating on your grade. But there isn't really the option of doing that in more detail. And so I think there's then a bit of a this was something else that Dame Gov has kind of brought up in the Education Select Committee, is that, you know, obviously it's not necessarily always that clear cut for every student. So you might have some students where they have, you know, been in a region where there's a lot of learning time missed in other schools, but their school isn't personally affected. Yeah. Or you could be a student who hasn't necessarily, you know, missed a lot of school and learning time, but actually, you know, you've had a bereavement, or your parent has suffered from COVID, and you've had other.
Teachers would be best placed to know, wouldn't they? Teachers would be in the position to, like, the closest person to that pupil who would be able to really gauge the amount of learning lost, wouldn't they?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I just think it might be very difficult to put that in any form of detail in terms of sort of exactly what's been lost. But she did say that could be done.
Yeah, hell of a task as well, isn't it? If you've got a lot of, you know, if you've got a big cohort, I imagine it might be quite onerous having to do all that.
Yeah, and it's quite. I think it would be quite hard to say, given, you know, some of the data on attendance and the year groups being in and out. I think it might be really difficult to make that judgment in terms of exactly where students are. So it's quite a big responsibility for subject teachers to, you know, to make that call in terms of exactly.
I tell you, you can understand it. I mean, Dame Glenys said that by the end of this year, teachers could be dog tired. That's something else she said at this Ed Select Committee this week, didn't she? Because she said that for that reason, there could be a lack of people to mark exams because the teachers are so kind of worn out with all the added pressures this year that they're just not prepared to do anything extra. And I mean, it was a really busy Ed Select Committee, I thought, on was it Tuesday or Wednesday? Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
And there seemed to be so many stories, one after the other. But I know you picked up on that, didn't you, about the teachers being dog tired, and that was the word she used, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Which is interesting, kind of thinking about what we were just speaking about the idea that teachers would kind of assess exactly where students are and how much lost learning they've had. That is going to be an additional responsibility. So then to sort of say that they'll have to do that, or they should maybe be doing that, but then they shouldn't, they might not want to mark papers. It seems to be a sort of slight contradiction there. But I think boards are worried about the idea of markers and invigilators for 2021. There is a concern about that.
It's been mentioned before, hasn't it? Last month, by one of the big heads unions, flagged it up, didn't they?
Yeah. I think Jeff Barton spoke about this, and it is a concern, because I think, you know, teachers will be. It's been a very unusual year, and teachers will be wanting a proper rest over summer months, and then. In terms of, I suppose, who else would maybe be able to do it, particularly with the idea of invigilating, it's not really going to be retirees, because they're sort of more at risk. I think they are doing a drive, all the boards, into extra recruitment for that purpose, but it's I think definitely a worry for them.
They're going to be under a lot more pressure as well, aren't they, because they're going to because the exams are 3 weeks later, but haven't they got to get the results coming out exactly at the same time? Is it a much smaller window?
Yeah, so it's I should have mentioned that. Thank you for mentioning it. Yeah, exactly. Part of this problem is that it's condensed, and they have less time to mark, and so that makes it more difficult.
Well, look, all those stories are on the website and more from this week's Ed Select Committee. But moving on to another big story of the week, the TIMSS survey, which is the Trends in International Maths and Science, published every 4 years, collects data for 10 and 14 year olds in maths and science in 64 countries. And the headlines are that England has produced its lowest ever score in primary science since these records began in 1995. When it comes to secondary science, the year nine science, that it's pretty much stayed the same as it was since the last survey 4 years ago. Maths, England is now number eight in the world for year five maths, up from 10 4 years ago. However, in year nine maths, it slid marginally down from 11th to 13th this time. Will, you know a bit about this. The rankings are not the most informative part of this, are they? Could we say?
Yeah, that was what the man behind him said in the run up to this.
Dirk Hasted, yeah, Dirk Hasted.
That's right. Which I found interesting because I think it just shows the kind of. The tension that the people that run these big studies have always got, which is on the one hand, they're doing something in real depth that they do a lot of tests, they ask a lot of questions, they produce a vast amount of data, like volumes and volumes of it. And they really want people to get to grips with it and to use it properly. On the other hand, they want it to be covered. And the one thing that people are interested in is they literally look at, is a country up or down? Where is it? Is it in the top 10? Who's top? Who's bottom? And it's like the education, you know, the charts of education, and it's like school league tables here. And it's in its own way, it's just as simplistic and potentially just as distorting. But and the people that produce it, they know that. But at the same time, if they don't produce the rankings, then people aren't going to talk about it. So yeah, that's one of the key things that comes across to me.
Dirk Hasted kind of said that you've got to look beyond the rankings and look at the more in-depth analysis. I think, you know, he was talking about, you know, what issues are going on in countries and how are different countries dealing with those issues in different ways and, you know, what are countries doing differently? Because, I mean, you look at the countries that are absolutely flying in this, and it's East Asia, and you've got Singapore for the second year running. He's top of the table, not just in science and maths, but in both year groups as well.
Completely swept the board again, yeah, for another year. I mean, I think for me as well, that's another kind of weakness. Obviously, we've got TIMSS and PIRLS. PIRLS is the one about reading, which is run by the same people as TIMSS. And then PISA, which more people, possibly better known, people have heard that. But you've got all these studies, and they're all... It's always now the East Asian countries that are dominating the top of the table. And I think the point of these are so that countries can learn lessons from each other. I think there's quite a lot about East Asia success that is that may well be down more to culture than something that is easy to replicate in a school. Now, that's quite a sweeping thing to say, but I think there's an element of truth in it. And I guess you could say, you know, it's almost proven by the results of these tables, because if countries really were learning from each other and getting better then because of this, then you might see things switching around a bit. You know, you might see a bit of a swap of knowledge and some countries just leaping up there, but you're not seeing that for kind of getting on for decades now. It's just East Asia's top. So yeah, I wonder how much of it, it's just measuring something that's fairly static rather than kind of encouraging a kind of dynamic learning process, which is what the people behind the studies would really like, I think, or certainly would like to be seen as.
One thing that I picked up on was that, all right, you've got England being number 8 in the world for year 5 maths, and all right, that's a good ranking. But beyond that, if you look beyond that, you've got a gender gap between boys and girls within primary maths, which Dirk Haster described as quite concerning. And he said you've got to look at encouraging more female maths teachers as role models. So yeah, I mean it's not just about the rankings, is it? Look, let's move on because we've got some breaking news today that Office of National Statistics figures show that secondary school pupils are again the highest infected rate of the population. And John, this is a story you've been working on, I believe. I think that, I mean, late last night we were told that secondary schools in the southeast were going to have, you know, rapid tests quite immediately. There's an immediate plan that's been put in action, isn't there?
Yes, that's right. So, yeah, last night at the government COVID briefing, Matt Hancock announced rapid testing for all secondary school age pupils in set areas of London and the southeast. And this is quite a kind of quite a dramatic announcement, I think, because it's for a while we've had the government really talking about the importance of schools staying open and that schools are safe. This seems like a fairly clear signal that they are concerned about COVID rates in secondary age pupils in these areas. And as you say, the ONS thing across the picture nationally shows that age group is the most prevalent as well. And we've had a bit more detail this morning, basically identifying the areas of London and parts of Essex that are going to get these tests and urging teachers, staff, pupils and their families to get tested as soon as possible. I suppose the other thing that's striking about it is that this has been drawn up quite rapidly for London and the southeast. But I think there's been a kind of a reaction in the north of England, which is where there's been previous hotspots for COVID in the northwest and in Hull most recently, where you know they've had COVID rates far higher population wise than what London and the southeast are seeing now, and saying, well, why wasn't this support available for us? I think, which is I suppose an understandable reaction. I think probably the most significant thing is it just feels like a change. Obviously, it's a dramatic announcement, but it's also kind of a change in tone in terms of the way the government's talking about COVID in schools. Before, there's been an emphasis on keeping things open and the value of education. But this is a kind of an admission that something needed to be done about specifically about COVID in school-age pupils in parts of London and Essex and Kent.
Of course, we had Liverpool, didn't we, last month? There was mass testing there of pupils. And I mean, at the time, Liverpool was the highest infection rate in the country. But it's very interesting when you look at Hull. It had something like 780 per 100,000, 780 cases per 100,000. And then there was no mass testing in schools. But then you've got somewhere like Waltham Forest. They've got 321 per 100,000, and there's mass testing. So it doesn't really kind of equate to a fair system, does it? I kind of know the point you're making.
Well, that's what the leaders in Hull have said. I mean, I think to be fair to them, they're not, you know, there's no sense that this shouldn't be happening in London.
Absolutely welcoming
that it's done. But yeah, just saying, well, why there and not here? We haven't got detailed breakdowns for ages of COVID rates in Hull at the time, but attendance was down to 65%, I think. So, you know, it was significant disruption. And I think the other thing is that, in a way, there's already this big debate, and we talked about it a bit earlier, about disruption being different in schools leading up to exams, and how do we ameliorate that? How do we measure that? If the government's response is going to be markedly different as well, that just adds another kind of imbalance, I think.
There obviously is, you know, on the surface, a north-south divide, but I mean, couldn't there be a completely innocent explanation? So they piloted the mass testing in Liverpool. By the time rates were peaking in Hull, it's been very quick, hasn't it? Might it not just be that the technology wasn't available when it got to Hull? You know, it looks like might look like a big conspiracy in favour of the southeast, but could it just be down to timescale that they're now at a point where they can roll these out?
Quite possibly. I mean, the whole thing, as I'm talking about, was 3 weeks ago, basically. So, yeah, I mean, that could well be a factor. We've got questions into the Department of Health about why now and not then.
And do you think it has been, you're saying it felt like a change of emphasis? I mean, to me, it just feels a bit more of the same, that they're looking at the mass testing because if you don't do that, I guess the alternative is to say that they can close, and it feels to me like the last kind of throw of the dice to stop that from happening.
I mean, that's absolutely true. It's consistent with that position that they want to keep schools open. I just think it's the first time I can think of a major announcement that kind of acknowledges that COVID in school among school age pupils is the big problem in this location. I think that's been something that the government hasn't really framed it like that before, and the general emphasis has been, you know, teachers are no more at risk than anywhere else, kids are most safe in schools, we want to keep kids' schools open at all times. That's been the kind of the message that's come out. And as well, I'm agreeing with you to an extent, in as much as that message about keeping schools open has remained consistent throughout it. It just feels like this thing yesterday, last night, was the first time where it's like we're going to have to specifically do something drastic and different and urgent because of COVID rates among school population. And I suppose it's quite striking that the first thing that came out from ASCL and NAHT immediately after it was, if it's this much of a problem, why not move online? And I think that's probably the question that's going to be asked again and again of the government. And it'll be really interesting as well, just to see what results these tests come back. Because I think one of the things the Department for Health have said today is that urging everyone to get tests, even if you've not got symptoms, because you can, you know, you can have it asymptomatically, as we know. I think it could really lift a lid on the extent of asymptomatic COVID pupils, really. Just how many kids have it without having symptoms. Obviously we're talking about testing a hotspot, but it'd be really interesting to see what the test results show if they're published widely.
And the Welsh thing just kind of added to the pressure, doesn't it? Because I mean, that was what the head unions were saying. It was such a contrast between what they've done in Wales and what they're doing.
Yeah, kind of similar situations, but completely different government responses. Yeah.
Finally, John, can you tell us about this Global Teacher Prize winner? What's the latest there?
Yeah, so we've spoken to Jamie Frost this week about his experience of winning the COVID Hero Award at the Global Teacher Prize. He also has received the prize money from the overall winner, who's agreed to share his prize with the other nine finalists. And one thing that he said to us, he's obviously found himself really thrust into the limelight, message from the Prime Minister, and his award was announced by a Hollywood film star. But he was saying that he...
Who was it, just out of interest? Can't mention a Hollywood film star.
Forrest Whitaker was the actor.
Yeah, great actor.
And he was saying that, you know, at the end of what has been a tumultuous and draining year for teachers, it's really nice to sort of see the award and therefore the profession get this recognition and this positive coverage. I think some teachers have felt there's been a kind of a negative narrative about them this year during the COVID year. But he was saying that he kind of feels like the award and the way it's explored what teachers have done during the pandemic has kind of given the profession as a whole, not just these finalists, a kind of a proper recognition for the importance of what they do, and especially this year.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks very much. And I think that's about it for another week. See you all soon. Bye.